All right. So the manners say that we should let the guest introduce himself. So this is the part where you tell everyone, and by everyone, I mean probably two people that are listening to this, who Bill Gorman is.
Well, like you said, my name is Bill Gorman, and I think the reason I am here is that I play TV Grim Reaper on Twitter and at tvgrimreaper.com, predicting the fates of U.S. broadcast scripted TV shows.
Exactly. Is it fair to say that you're basically the scientist in a museum?
Well, I think when I started doing this almost 10 years ago, there weren't a whole lot of people, applying numbers to that prediction, to those predictions. I think that's changed a lot. There are a lot of people that are doing it now. There are people doing it, you know, as well as I'm doing it. I do it because I continue to have fun doing it. I think 10 years ago, there were very few people doing it, if anyone.
Yeah, but basically, you are analyzing TV from almost a scientific kind of way. So you're looking at the numbers. You don't care about the content in a way. You just care what that content produces, which is audience. So you're being, I've read some interviews and some podcasts from you. And while the backlash is a little bit, even for TV reviewers themselves, they criticize the way you see television.
I think you're right. So that I'm looking at all these predictions completely from a business perspective, and a lot of that is the TV ratings for the shows. But a lot is also based on who produces the show, how old the show is. You know, there have been a lot of things that I've learned over the last 10 years that go into the predictions. But you're right, the content of the shows is completely irrelevant, and I have no idea what's in these shows other than, you know, just kind of the public cloud of knowledge that drifts around about these shows, because I've never watched any of them.
So when people say, oh, this is an amazing show, you don't know what you're saying, this will absolutely be coming back, you just say, well, the numbers said no.
Well, yes, or what I'll usually say is the contents of the show is completely irrelevant as to whether it continues or not.
So let's do a small exercise. So let's go back just a little bit, and in very simple ways, if you can, for those that don't know, can you explain how the ratings actually work? How is it measured, and how does it? For anyone that doesn't know about this part of television, how does it work?
Sure. In the United States, there are about 40,000 families that are what are called Nielsen families, and the Nielsen company goes to their homes and attaches devices to their TV equipment, including cable boxes or DVRs and computers, and soon. Tablet devices to measure what TV shows they're watching and when they're watching them, and more importantly, what commercials they're watching and when they're watching them.
So, do we have any idea how many families in each state there are, or?
Well, I'm off the top of my head, I don't, but Nielsen certainly does. They say that panel, it's 40,000 families, about 100,000 people. Are broadly representative of the United States population, and then they can kind of statistically smooth it out if they don't have, you know, exactly the right number of adults 18 to 49 that are professionals in metropolitan areas. They perform some magic on that to smooth things out.
And those people know they are being measured, or is
it random? Of course, the Nielsen contacts, I'm sure thousands and thousands and thousands of people, and ask them to be a part of it, be a part of the panel. And like I said, they have to come to your house and install physical devices connecting everything. Now, I think on a computer or on a tablet, it might be a software process. But for your TV or your DVR or your cable box, it is a box that monitors what you're watching and when you're watching. And you also have to indicate, you know, which members of the family are watching. And they know, you know, that you have to tell them who's in your family and how old they are. And, you know, they know where you live and you tell them how much money you make and all sorts of different things.
Okay. And this system has been working the same way since the beginning of television, obviously in a bigger scale, but it, does it, is it been the same process?
No, I think originally, again, I don't really know about the distant past, but originally there were paper diaries that people would have to fill out, talking about what they watched. Now, all the ratings that anyone sees online, all the ratings anyone sees, period, really, in the public, are collected by these boxes. They're called people meters, and they are in effectively the 56 or 7 biggest U.S. markets. Nielsen still does use paper diaries in smaller markets 4 months out of the year, but those are only used to measure local show ratings, not the national ratings that anyone ever hears about. So while the diaries are still in use in smaller markets 4 months a year, no ratings that anyone has ever seen except people who are buying local TV ad spots.
Okay.
You know,
do you have any information? Do you have any information if this is the system that works in the other places like Europe or any other countries? Do you know if this is the same measurement they use?
I have no idea. I don't even know if Nielsen is a big giant company that does a lot more things than just measure TV ratings, and they're all over the world. Certainly, you know, they measure retail sales, they measure all sorts of stuff, and a lot of that is a worldwide business for them. I don't think they measure television, you know, viewing anywhere but the United States, but I could easily be wrong. I think every other country has, you know, kind of their own companies that measure TV ratings, and I really don't know anything at all about any other countries.
How does it work when it comes to cable? So for those that don't know, when we talk about network, we are basically talking about NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, and CW, which is, well, it shouldn't be quite in the same league, but well, it is, it's in the network. But then we have cable like HBO, AMC, Cinemax and stuff. How does it work with those? Is it the same thing?
It is. It's exactly the same process. I don't do predictions for cable shows for a variety of reasons. First of all, the methods that I use rely on the fact that the broadcast schedule is a fixed amount of time. Most of the networks, or some three of the networks, are 22 hours. Fox is 15 hours. CW is 10 hours a week, and it's filled with content. Those hours are all filled with original content during the broadcast season. Cable networks, in general, they're not filled with original content. You know, cable networks broadcast 24 hours a day, or telecast 24 hours a day, and a lot of them will have just a couple hours of original content a day at, you know, during prime time. And so they have a lot of space where they can keep underperforming shows. So there's no up or out mechanism that happens in cable. And then I'm not particularly motivated to figure out how to predict for cable shows, because the reality is for broadcast shows, even shows that are failing have a pretty big audience, millions and millions of people. Okay. So the biggest cable shows in the United States also have millions and millions of people in their audience, but those shows are definitely getting renewed. So it's very boring to predict for those shows. The shows, the shows that are maybe getting canceled have much, much, much smaller audiences on cable. And so the number of people who care is so small, mm-hmm. it's not worth bothering trying to figure it out.
One thing that I read in one, I don't know if it was on a podcast or interview, but it was something that kind of struck me. And I think a lot of people don't know this. When it comes to a renewal of a TV show, it doesn't really matter if they do well or not. It matters if they are above the average of that network specifically or not. So even if it wins on a night, if it's lower than all the other shows in the same network, it's going to be canceled. Is that right?
Well, I think you could broadly say certainly that the ratings for a show versus shows on other networks mean nothing. It's completely irrelevant. It is the ratings versus the other shows on that network that matter. However, that's not the only thing that matters. Like I said, how old the show is, who produces the show. You know, there are many things that matter. And you know, ratings, the ratings get you most of the way on many shows. But there are the factors. But to your specific question, does it matter if you win your time slot or win the night? No, that doesn't matter at all.
Can you explain us a little bit of the symbiosis between CBS and CW? Because it is kind of different from all the other networks. Obviously, CW has ratings way lower than the others, but shows still survive and still there's people still watching them. How does it work when it comes to CBS and CW? Is there like CW gets the shows that CBS doesn't want, or what's the deal with that?
So people outside the United States often don't know where those US shows come from, right? And the networks in the United States are really irrelevant to people outside the United States. What matters is what studios produce those shows. And the CW is half owned by CBS and half owned by Warner Brothers. Obviously, CBS has a broadcast network. Warner Brothers does not. The CW was created combining what was called the WB, which is Warner Brothers' old network, and UPN, which was another network that CBS owned. I don't know when that happened. In the early 2000s, they were combined into the CW. That's why it's called C for CBS and W for Warner Brothers, WB. Okay. All the shows on the CW during the season, all the scripted shows, are produced either by CBS and Warner Brothers. And really, they use the CW network as just marketing for those shows, because their real objective, they really make their money taking those shows that they produce, CBS Studios on one hand and WB Studios on the other hand, and reselling them to other buyers, whether that buyer is Netflix, who might take the worldwide rights for a show, or that might be cable networks in the United States. It might be networks outside the United States. So if, you know, somebody's watching Supernatural in France or Germany or the UK, you know, they're watching it on whatever channel there, and that channel made a deal with Warner Brothers to buy Supernatural. And so that's how Warner Brothers and CBS are making their money. And it's the conventional wisdom is the CW itself loses money on an operating basis, and that CBS and Warner Brothers make it up by, you know, reselling those shows. And in terms of ratings, you know, the CW ratings are much smaller. But first of all, the CW compared to the other four networks is obviously a low budget operation. You know, their overhead is much lower. Their staff is much smaller. The shows are much cheaper. You know, the budgets of CW shows are much less than the budgets for, you know, 1 hour dramas on CBS or NBC or ABC. So that's how, you know, that's how the CW is a business with the ratings that they have.
Picking on that subject, two things. One, obviously, if you can explain us what syndication is, and B, in what way a TV network in Portugal or France or England, whatever, buying a TV show from ABC or NBC or CBS and making a success in Europe makes a difference when it comes to renewal of a show in the United States. Is it a big factor? Is it a low factor? How does that work?
So syndication, or what's also called off broadcast or off the broadcast networks in the United States, off broadcast syndication means when a television show that might currently be running on broadcast, or it might be an older show, it gets sold to other companies to broadcast it or to telecast it. Those might be local affiliates in the United States, where they might run, comedies before prime time starts between, 6 and 8 p.m. in the United States. It might be cable networks in the United States that might take comedies or dramas and, fill up their, again, like I said, they're broadcasting or telecasting 24 hours a day. They need filler to fill those hours. So, they will buy shows that were on broadcast, put them on the air. Could be, networks like ITV in the UK or Canal Plus in France. They buy these US shows from the studios. Again, not the networks. The networks don't control the shows. The studios control the shows. Show them in France and England. And now, there's Netflix and Amazon and Hulu that can also buy the rights to these shows. And sometimes they're exclusive rights, meaning nobody else gets them. Sometimes they're non-exclusive, meaning, you might be able to watch them on Amazon, shows on Amazon or Netflix and a TV network.
They may have the right for 1 year, for example, and then after that it's kind of gets other networks might buy it or something.
Yeah, it could be a limited length of time. It could just be, somebody has the rights in the United States. Somebody has the online rights outside the United States. Somebody has TV rights outside the United States and in different countries. It could be very complicated.
But the shows have to have a limit, like at least a certain number of episodes to be on syndication, yeah?
No, I don't. There is no magic number. Every single show gets sold. Every single show that gets produced gets sold. The conventional wisdom is the more episodes produced, the better you're likely to do on a per episode basis for selling a show. And certainly the more episodes you produce, you kind of amortize whatever fixed costs you have in the show, right? So producing the show on an incremental basis gets a little bit cheaper. And, if you're selling those episodes, the episodes are all probably costing somebody the same amount. So the economics get better the more episodes you make. But every show gets sold. Now, there was this idea back when syndication only meant, okay, the only people we're doing this for are local broadcast affiliates who are going to run, a Seinfeld episode before the nightly news every night. Well, then, they said, oh, you want to have 110 episodes because then you could run. In the United States, if you're running just on weekdays, that's, 250, 260 weekdays a year. And if you had 110 episodes, you could run, a certain number of episodes per week and not double up until a certain time. That really doesn't, I don't think that really matters that much anymore. So it's not, there is no magic number of, some number needs to be hit or something didn't happen. I think, the more episodes that get produced economically, that's better for the studio.
So imagine the scenario where a show is doing bad on your ratings and you kind of assume that it's going to be canceled. But at the same time, he's selling like crazy in Europe. What is the likeliness of that show being renewed just because of those sales, or it's very, very unlikely?
I don't take that into account at all, because I really haven't found it to be a factor. I think in almost every case, the business in the United States will determine, you know, success or failure. That whatever's outside the United States is a bonus, but it's not going to determine the life or death of the show. Now, that said, the reality is nobody knows how much money a show is making outside the United States. Because when people say, oh, it does really well, it's selling really well in these countries, that's a lie. They have no idea what reality is. You know, there are a few dozen people in the syndication sales, you know, departments of the U.S. TV studios that know how much money shows are making. Nobody else knows. So there's it really seems like the United States business drives everything. And even in some cases when it might not, there's no public information that would be useful, right? So when someone says, oh, it's doing really well outside the United States, they're just making that up because they have no idea.
Because they probably measure the talk in social media and they assume that means something, or
yeah, whatever they measure is irrelevant. They have no idea how much money was paid for that show. None. They have no idea.
So advertising has been going downhill. Even ratings themselves are going downhill on network. Most of the companies now, they bet on social media and YouTube and that kinds of platforms. What is your picking when it comes to network? What do you think network is doing? And if they are not doing anything, is there any way they can save themselves? Is network just a sinking ship when it comes to ad revenue?
Well, for the broadcast networks, you know, as ratings fall, they raise their prices. Broadcast advertising revenue has been pretty flat, kind of tied to, you know, the United States economy. So when the U.S. economy goes up, 3%, broadcast network ad revenues go up 3%. It's not exactly perfect, but you know, when the economy goes down, broadcast ad revenues go down. So it's basically a pretty flat business, right? Because the United States economy is maybe growing a percent or two a year. That's it. So it's effectively a no growth business for broadcast networks. So how are they increasing? So that said, it's not like their ad revenue is plunging. It's not, you know, as they've pretty much been able to make up with price increases as ratings fall, because they're still in most cases, you know, the biggest game in town. If you want to reach 20 million people at once, the only place to do that is an NFL football game. But as advertising has flattened, I mean, these businesses want to grow. They don't want to have, you know, flat revenues. So cable networks in the United States, again, I don't know how it works outside the United States, have for a very long time gotten paid per subscriber by the companies like Comcast and DirecTV to distribute their cable channels. That has been happening for a very long, for 20 or 30 years. And in the last five-ish years, broadcast networks have been getting that kind of money too. And that is now somewhere between 10 and 20% of CBS revenues. And that was 5 years ago, it was probably 0%. So that's one way they're making money. They're making money. All the broadcast networks are airing a higher percentage of shows produced by their own studios now, because when they own the shows, those studios make money, and then the whole corporation as a whole makes money. So they don't air as many shows from somebody else's studio as they used to. So they're finding ways to make money. They're not broadcasts for, and also, you know, ABC is a tiny part of the Disney business.
Yeah.
NBC
is running out of money.
Well, it's buried in a giant conglomerate. NBC is a tiny part of Comcast. Fox was a relatively tiny part of 21st Century Fox, but now they're selling, you know, a large portion of that company to Disney. It's going to, you know, Fox Network is going to be a huge part of the remaining business then. CBS is a huge part of the CBS Broadcast Network is a huge part of CBS Inc. There aren't that many other businesses that matter within CBS Inc.
Okay. I know that the first part of your answer is going to be, I don't watch these kinds of shows, so I really don't know. But I would like to pick your brain of what you think it's the idea here. Because like you, I, besides some comedies, I don't watch network TV anymore. I watch basically cable and Netflix and Amazon and stuff like that. Why do you think that network keeps betting on the kind of shows like remakes and reboots and kind of shows that the public doesn't seem to want for the last a few years, at least the people that really like television? Why do you think that it's they think it's still safe to do that when it's clearly not, what people just don't tune in?
Whoa, ask that question again, because I think I disagree with you.
You don't think that people are not tuning in? Do you think they are still?
Well, wasn't your question, why do the networks do
remakes and reboots and stuff?
They do it to reduce risk, right? They think it's less risky to either reboot or remake a show than come up with a new show. And I haven't done any analysis of this, but just off the top of my head, I think they're right. If you look at what shows have been remade or rebooted are still on the air and which ones are off the air. So the ones that are off the air, I'm going to forget about, but the only one that just jumps up to me is The Odd Couple, which was, you know, remade and canceled after three seasons. But what's still on the air? Why?
For every Roseanne that is kind of people tuning in for that, there is always a MacGyver. There's always a Taken
whatever. MacGyver's doing fine. MacGyver's now what on what season? It is a MacGyver is a second season show. It's been renewed, so it's in three seasons. That's going to last six seasons on CBS. Lethal Weapon's doing fine. Hawaii 5-0, how many seasons have that been on? It's an eight season show. It's going to be at least a nine season show. Will and Grace did fine. I mean, it's an average rated show for NBC, but it's coming back next year. It's actually coming back for two more years. I haven't looked at all the numbers, but I would suggest that, again, spinoffs, you know, you get spinoffs, which are, okay, well, we're going to take a side story and make a new show.
NCIS keeps,
right. Yeah. Again, those shows survive at a greater rate than shows that
yeah, original that ideas, aren't. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although people like me that, well, you know, they kind of want to see new ideas and stuff like that. The truth is most of the people, they still prefer those kinds of shows.
Well, I mean, you got to be careful when you say most people, because let's look at Roseanne, right? Roseanne, a big whoop-de-doo. Whoa, so successful. 3.5% of U.S. adults 18 to 49 watched that show this week. 3.5%. So don't say most people. Most people are the 96.5% of the adults 18 to 49 that didn't watch the show. So, you know, it's all relative. And you know, the reality is those networks can make a lot more money off of even a little bit more successful show. right? So, you know, even though 96% of the people aren't watching Roseanne, the 3.5% that did, that's going to make ABC a lot of money.
Yeah, makes sense. What do you think that is going to change when it comes to all this, this whole environment with the purchase of Fox by Disney? Do you think anything is going to really change, or it's going to change in the background, but the public is not going to feel any difference?
Well, I think if the deal happens as proposed, and that's, you know, it's still a question mark. I mean, who knows if it's really all going to get done the way it's been proposed? Then Fox will be the only broadcast network and the first broadcast network ever that I know of. Maybe 50 years ago it was different. That doesn't have its own studio. So the idea of, you know, Fox is going to load up shows that load up on shows produced by Fox Studios, that's not going to happen. Now, my guess is it's only going to change slowly. That is, Fox is going to keep successful shows on their air that are already on their air, no matter what studio they're from. But then in the future, obviously all new shows that Fox puts on their air have to come from somebody else.
This might sound a little stupid question, but isn't Marvel Studios from Disney? So can't they like branch from there? Or,
well, I mean, presumably, if Disney made the decision to sell Marvel shows to someone other than ABC, they could. They haven't. I mean, I'm not sure why they. I mean, maybe they. There are kind of superhero-y shows that Marvel has tried to sell to other networks.
What I mean is, can't Disney use the same system that works with Marvel Studios and try to apply for self-produced shows for Fox? Is it possible, or is that
well? So
doable?
maybe you don't understand what the deal is.
Maybe the
transaction. So right now, 21st Century Fox is Fox Broadcast Network, Fox Sports 1 and 2 Cable Network, Fox News Network, a collection of local sports. I don't want to call them networks, but local sports channels in like 25 cities in the United States, and Fox TV studios and Fox movie studios also. I think Fox Studios is just TV and movies together. And Disney is buying, plus a handful of cable channels, including FX, FXX, National Geographic. So those are non-sports or news cable channels. Disney is buying Fox Studios, and Disney is buying FX and FXX and National Geographic Channel, and they're buying those local, they're called regional sports networks, RSNs, in 25 cities. So that's what Disney's buying. Disney is not buying Fox Broadcast Network. Disney is not buying Fox Sports 1 and 2 Cable Network, and Disney is not buying Fox News, or there's also Fox Business. There's also another cable channel. So Disney's not buying those.
So everything like The Simpsons or Family Guy or any Fox show is not going to be owned by Disney, or at least that whole network is not going to be owned by Disney. It's the studios that produce.
Well, I think you're a little confused. Fox Studios owns The Simpsons. They produce The Simpsons. They own it. Okay. Fox Broadcast Network does not own The Simpsons. Once Fox Studios is owned by Disney, again, assuming the deal goes through, Disney will own The Simpsons. Okay. So all the shows and movies, all the movies also that have been produced by Fox Studios will be owned by Disney. Fox Broadcasting Network doesn't own any shows Well, I guess they you know, they have like some studio news show or something. Maybe they own that. But all their shows are going to be produced by all their scripted shows are going to be produced by somebody else. You know, they still have Fox Sports. So when they do, you know, NFL broadcasts or baseball or whatever, all sports stuff is still going to be produced by Fox. But scripted shows, any TV show that's created by a studio is going to have to be created by somebody else's studio.
In a way, it's like, I hope I'm doing the analogy correct and not making myself more stupid, but it's like CW keeping being CW, but losing Warner Brothers and CBS Studios.
That would be a similar situation.
Okay. Okay. Now I understand what you mean about the studios. Okay. Okay. Sorry about that. So in a way it's going to make, Fox produce scripted shows. It's going to be more expensive for them. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. So right now, so if Fox is buying a show from WB, like Gotham or Lucifer, they pay WB a certain amount of money per episode. Conventional wisdom is they don't pay as much as it costs to produce. That is, WB is producing that show right now at a loss, and WB makes it up by reselling the show either after it goes off Fox or now, I guess, it could resell it to cable networks. And so in the future, I mean, I don't think you should look at it as Fox's shows are going to be less expensive or more expensive. What will be true is Fox has no way to make money on those shows except by selling advertising.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So today when CBS shows, you know, somebody else, you know, a WB sitcom, the only way CBS makes money is the ads that they run during that show. But when they show a CBS show, well, that show is going to get sold somewhere else, either now or in the future, and CBS is going to make money from that. So they have multiple ways to make money from shows they own. In the future, Fox Network, they won't, the only way they make money is selling ads. And they've already said, we're going to do more sports and we're going to do more news. Right. So when you say that we're going to do more sports and we're going to do more news, that means we're going to do less scripted shows and they're probably going to do unscripted shows. Right. So unscripted shows, the difference is they're not getting resold. Right. There is no big market to buy repeats of American Idol or, you know, The Voice or, you know, any of those shows. So for any network, just about the only way to make money on unscripted shows is the selling of ads.
You are famous now. You were by the Bear before, but now the Grim Reaper. What I like, to be completely honest with you, is not the ratings. Again, I don't follow the network shows, but I really like the humor that you use on your Twitter handle. Is it all you? Is it a team? How does it work?
No, it's just me, and it's just a hobby now. So you might understand a little bit of the history. My partner Robert Seidman and I created a website called TV by the Numbers almost 11 years ago, and as part of that, I created the character, the Cancellation Bear, to do this predicting stuff. Robert and I, almost exactly four years ago, sold TV by the Numbers to the Tribune Company. And the Tribune Company still owns it and operates the site.
And he left the Bear.
I sold it. We sold it. Yeah. And the person who is the Cancellation Bear now is an employee of the Tribune Company. Just really as a hobby, I do the Grim Reaper stuff just because it's fun. And the Twitter stuff is the most fun. So I really don't do very much on the website at all. In fact, I do as little as possible on the website.
Does it still fascinate you how clueless or hopeful people can be about TV shows? I know for a lot of people, TV shows is a love. It's a passion. But does it still baffle you that people react that way?
No, because most people don't need to know. You know, people are busy people. They have lives. The kinds of things that, you know, crazy people like me know after doing this for 10 years are not things that most people need to know. And so the fact that they don't know them, that shouldn't surprise anyone. You know, there are plenty of businesses that I have no idea how they work, nor do I need to, nor do I care. So you know, it's just a matter of, you know, what do people need to know? And
how do you react when you see one more petition for the show to come back?
The immediate thought is, you know, those people are wasting their time. I'm, you know, unless people, you know, jump into my mentions and make a big deal about it, I don't go looking for silly people to make fun of them. But if somebody wants to jump into my mentions, I'll make fun of them. Right. I'm not, like I said, I'm not looking for people to make fun of, because literally that's a 24 hour thing, making fun of silly people online.
So I guess my kind of second to last question is, what's the future then? What do you expect for the future for your science, under quotes? And what do you think it's going to change mostly in the near future about television in general that people should expect?
You know what? I really don't know. Things will change. I mean, things have definitely changed over the last 10 years, in terms of, you know, how networks behave and how they make decisions, and, you know, things that are true today were not true 10 years ago, and vice versa. And, you know, what'll happen is things will happen for the first time this spring, and all of a sudden next year it'll happen again, and all of a sudden that's the way things work. And I have no prediction of what those things are going to be. I think last year, one of the things that happened was networks picked up way more shows that their own studios produced than had been typical. If that happens again, and I don't really watch things until the announcements get made, but if that happens again, then you could probably assume that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah, in-house products.
Right, right.
Okay, I guess my last question is, if you don't watch any of the network shows, what do you watch?
Mostly sports, mostly NFL, but you know, college sports, baseball or football and basketball, you know, Major League Baseball, NBA basketball. I watch a couple ESPN shows, one show called PTI, one show called Highly Questionable, which those are like daily studio shows. And then when they're on, I watch Game of Thrones, Top Gear, which is a British car show, and a U.S. cable show called Better Call Saul. And I watch, you know, things on Amazon and Netflix all the time, various things.
Okay, Bill. I won't steal any more of your time. Thank you so much for this 45 minutes of enlightenment. I am more enlightened, at least. And thank you very much.
Sure, it was fun. Good luck.